Good morning and welcome back to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skursky, joined by executive sports editor Perrin Keyes. And Perrin, we are a day removed or a few hours removed here from the latest Bills victory. They are now 4-0 on the season, 31-19 over the New Orleans Saints. Far from a dominating performance, I would say, but you know, the end result is the end result. They're 4-0. They've scored 30 plus points in each of those four wins. And Perrin, what stood out to you? Let's start with the offense in particular. What stood out to you offensively from the Bills in this game?
Oh, I think it was interesting. You know, we've talked about it, I think, now for 4 weeks straight. Or we will talk about this now. For 4 weeks straight, you're talking about an offense in particular, well, a team in particular, that hasn't played a complete game, I don't think, for 4 weeks. But yet you look up at the scoreboard at the end of the game, they put up 30-plus points in four straight weeks, and they're 4-0. So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, and I don't, you know, you can take this wherever you want to take it, Jay, but, you know, in the first quarter of this game against the Saints, the wide receivers really showed up and showed out. I think at the end of the first quarter, they had 103, the receivers themselves, Keon Coleman, Curtis Samuel, who was active for the first time this year, Khalil Shakir, and Josh Palmer. They combined for 103 yards at the end of the first quarter. And then all of a sudden, along with the rest of the offense, they just sort of hit the snooze button and kind of disappeared along with the rest of the offense for the second quarter and then parts of the third, and along with the rest of the offense again, and kind of disappeared a little bit. A lot of that had to do with the offensive line, I think, of course. And as Sean McDermott himself made mention in his post-game press conference, they just sort of, they were getting outplayed in the second quarter in particular, and maybe even parts of late in the third quarter as well. But it looked like it was going to be a game that you thought was going to go the way that it was supposed to go to start off. But then, as I said, sort of hit the snooze button. I don't know how else to put it. You know, if it was something the Saints were doing schematically, or if it was just a case of schematics just starting to break down, or just what, you know, they're really seeming like they were having issues on the offensive line and maybe got out of whack in terms of sequencing and things of that nature. But as I said, the first thing that stood out to me was the wide receivers showing up and showing out and then kind of disappearing until late in the game. And then, of course, Dalton Kincaid showed up and Josh Allen did what Josh Allen does.
Yeah. I think a couple things there. For me, the offensive line, you notice the importance of Spencer Brown when he's out. Ryan Vandermark, I thought, struggled at times. There's a drop-off in play, as you would expect when you lose a starter. But, you know, Spencer Brown is an important piece of that offensive line. And, you know, the continuity that they've had up front, I think, really benefits that entire group. And you see what happens when a quarterback is pressured. Allen was sacked three times. That's a big number for him, actually. The guy doesn't take a lot of sacks. And so, you know, they were able to get to him, made him uncomfortable, disrupted maybe some of the timing of those routes that you mentioned. Because, yeah, I mean, I think they went from playing probably the best quarter of football they've played in the first quarter to easily the worst offensively in the second quarter. I mean, they just couldn't get anything going at all in that second quarter. It was a little better in the second half. You know, the one thing they've done really nicely is, you know, they've scored a touchdown on every opening drive this year, 4 for 4 now. And the drive after halftime, too, was a really nice, sustained drive. You know, they made the plays when they had to offensively, but the numbers, you know, 3 of 10 on third down. Oh, you know, they went for it on fourth once, and that was not a pretty play. Didn't work. So they were stopped on their only fourth down conversion. And you know, 22 pass attempts for Josh Allen. It's a really low number. He did complete 16 of them for 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he did throw an interception. So, you know, some of the things that we haven't seen from Allen in terms of taking sacks, in terms of, you know, putting the ball in harm's way. There was another pass that was very nearly intercepted too. So he almost threw two in this game. And we haven't seen much of that from him. And I do think some of that was related to the pressure that he got. And again, that, you know, goes back to the importance of Spencer Brown. Not putting it all on Vandermark, but, you know, there was some issues from that side of the line.
I will say, just in sort of the lines, I guess, defense or whatever. It was interesting. I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, it was, I don't want to say roller coaster, but sort of weird and inconsistent, I guess would be one way to put it too, because you mentioned the drive the Saints had coming out in the third quarter, where they went down the field and scored. That was kind of old-fashioned football. A lot of runs from James Cook, who had another great day, and they didn't go down the field. There were a lot of short passes that went for 10, 15 yards. Jackson Hawes got involved, and I'd have to go back and look, but if I'm not mistaken, that was another Curtis Samuel where he got involved too. But there was a lot of old-fashioned football there on that drive too. So that was a good showing from the line there. But yeah, protection issues there, other parts of the game, just a sort of an odd, inconsistent, and of course, as again, we're saying that for a team that put up 30 points on the board for the fourth week in a row. So strange, a lot of room for improvement, and that's there's something to be said for that for a team that's 4-0. Okay, so Jay, let's talk about the other side of the football, defense. Certainly some great things to hang your hat on if you're Bobby Babbage. And again, just like the offense, the Bills offense, some things that you got to really frankly worry about if you're the defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. Seemingly a lot of missed tackles. The Saints finished 5 of 13 on third down, which looks okay, but if we're going to be honest, at what point in the game the Saints were 5 of 10. This is a team that's frankly not very good on offense. Not one of the better teams in the NFL on offense in particular. Spencer Rattler is he's fine for what the Saints are right now, which is a team that's looking to frankly get a high draft pick. And they averaged, if I'm not mistaken, 5.3 yards per rush. Yesterday, this was a team that was going into Sunday's game, averaging 3.9 yards per rush. They really kind of had their way at times on the ground. Did the Saints and Spencer Rattler got free several times on scrambles. As I said, they were 5 for 10 on third downs at one point, and really they should have been, I guess, 6 for 11 on third downs. If you think about the 3rd and 13 there late in the game, where Spencer Rattler had Brandon Cooks wide open in the end zone. If that's a better quarterback, we discussed this during the game, Jay. If that's a better quarterback, frankly, and just an average NFL quarterback, that's a touchdown all day and all night. Spencer Rattler throws it behind Brandon Cooks. He almost made a circus catch. Of course, it wound up being ruled incomplete on replay. And so there you have it. No matter how you slice it. Several things for the defense to have to work on and clean up as they look ahead to a New England Patriots team that's coming in here, coming off a big win.
Yeah, the rushing numbers were it didn't feel that way when watching the game, at least to me, but then you look at the end of the day and it's 189 yards on the ground for the Saints, 5.6 actually per carry. And as you mentioned, a lot of that was scrambles from Rattler. It seemed that I don't know if maybe the Bills just didn't think that he could really beat him with his legs the way that he did. I mean, it seemed like they were really going after him when he was in the pocket, which I understand. You're trying to make a younger, inexperienced quarterback uncomfortable back there, but that left the middle of the field wide open at times, and that really hurt him. And Kamara looks like he still got it. He had a nice game. So the rushing numbers are concerning. They were, quite frankly, higher than I thought. When I look back at I'm looking at the game book after the game, going, boy, they really let up a lot of rushing yards in this one. And to your point, the third downs, the issue with the third and longs, I think the first conversion for the Saints was 3rd and 8 or 3rd and 9. And that's a situation where it's like, okay, you've got to get off the field, especially against this quarterback. And, it felt like a lot of here we go again, right? In terms of some of the issues defensively, some of the issues that we've seen. These issues are not new. Run defense is not new in terms of being a problem. Third down defense is not new in terms of being a problem. Now, that being said, we do need to give the defense some credit here too, right? It was 4 drive starts inside of Bills territory. That's a lot for any defense. The field position battle, if you will, was certainly favoring the Saints there for a while. And so at the end of the day, to give up 19 points, you'll take that any time. You're going to win most of your games when you have Josh Allen, if you hold a team to 19 points, regardless of quality of opponent. And let's give Cole Bishop some props here too, right? You know, he's a guy that I've written about a lot that I think the Bills have needed more from. You know, the safety position in general is one that we've discussed over and over in terms of the level of play that the Bills have gotten there. That is a big time play that he makes. You know, that takes points off the board. It's, you know, the Saints are inside the Bills, 5 yard line at that point. Guaranteed field goal, and still have one more play to run to try to get into the end zone if they decide to at the end of the second half, and or excuse me, at the end of the second quarter, and it's a 14-10 game at that point. So absolutely huge play by Bishop, athletic play, great, you know, great photos coming out of that game of him leaping really high in the air to make that play. And you know, they don't lose the turnover battle, right, because of that. And you know, Allen had thrown an interception earlier, and Bishop gets it back for the Bills. So massive play. They got the plays that they needed to. You look at the pass rush at the end of the game. It took them a while, but Epinesa and Bosa kind of closed it out against Rattler. And so there's some things to build on there. But you know, until they show, you know, better third down defense, better run defense, it feels like we're going to be discussing some of these same things over and over.
Just to put a little finer point on Cole Bishop's play, if you go back and look at that play, if anybody's got, you can probably find it on the TV replay, even if you don't have access to the All-22. Not only the athleticism that he showed in leaping to make that grab, but if you find where he is to start that play and the amount of real estate that he had to cover, first of all, the read that he had to make to figure out what was going on in that play, and the distance that he had to cover, the ground that he had to make up, the read that he had to make, the ground that he had to make up to close the gap to be able to figure out that play and to make that play. That was an impressive play by Cole Bishop. So, yes, absolutely. I think seems like everybody in Western New York has been talking about the safety position and whether it's enough. So, yes, he does deserve quite a bit of credit for that play and for the coverage he displayed on that play and during parts of that game as well. So, yes, certainly some silver lining in all parts of these, and just like the offense and just like the rest of these games, silver lining for the defense in every part of all four of these games. You know, things that you say, well, they're not playing very, very well, but you look up and they're 4-0. They've made plays when they've had to make plays. And so it's sort of the both sides of this coin, right? Which is to say, well, okay, if they clean things up, watch out, because they're 4-0 and they can only get better. The flip side, of course, is, well, if they don't clean these things up, at some point it's going to come back to bite them. So where are they as they come to this fork in the road with the Patriots coming up?
Okay, and parents, so we are now 4 weeks into the season, a quarter of the way, although with a 17-game schedule, we don't get to use that precisely right, accurately, right, because it's not exactly a quarter, but we're going to round off, or round to a quarter of the way in. The four-week window here, though, is significant for a big reason, and that is injuries in terms of guys who are on injured reserve, and I'm thinking mostly of Maxwell Hairston and Tyler Bass. Now, they have served the required amount of time and now are eligible to return to the active roster. And so that's going to be a big talking point this week, because we've got some guys that are eligible to come off IR. We've got some guys that we think in Ed Oliver and Matt Milano, Spencer Brown as well, who are close to being able to return. They were not placed on injured reserve, which would lead you to believe that their absences were expected to be less than 4 weeks. And so they've got some decisions to make, both in terms of the active roster, creating spots for Bass and for Hairston if they are ready to return, and then just lineup decisions, right? Game day decisions in terms of who sits if Ed Oliver returns, if Matt Milano returns, how do they run that lineup? Does Dorian Williams go back to being the third linebacker? Shaq Thompson maybe sees his playing time cut. So I guess what I'm getting at here is that we've got a lot of interesting decisions to make in a relatively short amount of time before week five here against the big game against New England.
Certainly. I'll start with Max Harrison. I'll sort of lean on your expertise here, Jay, as the beat writer. But what I gleaned, and tell me if I'm full of malarkey, here with some of Sean McDermott's comments recently about Max Hairston, but what I gleaned from some of his comments is basically, and I'm paraphrasing wildly, wildly paraphrasing here, but in so many words, what I gleaned here from his comments are, or I'm interpreting here, he's sort of saying, well, okay, Max Hairston's coming back. He's looking good. He's looking better anyway. We've started to see him run at full speed and things of that nature. But if you really sort of think about it and zoom out quite a bit, he had almost no training camp to speak of. He obviously had no preseason to speak of, and now he's so what do you know about how, what they know about him in terms of what he can do on a professional level, as a pro football player? And so how much do they trust about what he can do? I'm sure he's got all the potential. I mean, obviously they think he's got all the potential in the world. They wouldn't have drafted him in the first round, but how much do they trust him in terms of can they throw him out there and when can they throw him out there? And I don't want to take it too far, but are they leaning at him, leaning toward him, sort of very, very slowly working him into the lineup because they just don't know what they don't know about him. Put it to you that way, and that's a case where, and that's a case where maybe that's why you see the Bills sort of rotating in Dorian Strong as they did on Sunday, and working him into the lineup a little bit, series by series, along with Tre'Davious White, that kind of thing. Other players, obviously, you'd love to see Ed Oliver back. And I'll say this too, TJ Sanders has not made much of an impact, frankly, as a high draft pick. But Deion Walker has absolutely shown an impact. And so you say, well, okay, maybe TJ Sanders is somebody who you can take a look at and say, well, that's an easy call. You sort of slough him off a little bit, and Deion is the sort of the natural guy to keep around a little bit longer. And he's the guy, in other words, as to pair along with Ed Oliver on the defensive interior. And then I frankly don't know where Matt Milano is in terms of his injury, and so again, that's where I'll sort of lean on you and see what you see and what you're hearing in terms of where he is and his status.
Well, let's start with Hairston. So, I mean, there's two parts of this, right? There's the physical, and then there's the, let's call it mental, the getting up to speed, right? Getting the reps in. He has not had the on-field reps at practice. There's no question about that. We've seen him off working to the side over the last week or so at practice. He's still got a fairly heavy brace on. So, for me, the biggest question right now is I don't know even physically if he's ready to return because, it's a long ramp up and that brace is still pretty substantial. So, but let's assume that he is. Let's assume that he's, physically able to get back out there and start practicing. I think that at cornerback in Sean McDermott's defense, they're comfortable putting guys out there. I mean, Dorian Strong's out there week one starting because Tre'Davious White is hurt. He's a sixth-round pick, a rookie. Go back to a couple years ago, they trade for Rasul Douglas at the deadline. Now, I know he's a veteran. He's been around, but he's out there starting really quickly. And so I think at cornerback, that Sean McDermott trusts that he can put guys out there and they're going to be all right. I think it's a different story at safety. I think the mental ramp up and build up required to play safety is different than cornerback in this defense. So I think when Hairston is ready physically, I think we're going to see him get an opportunity. I'm not saying he's going to start right away. I'm not saying he's going to, maybe he starts to rotate in with Tre White the way that we've seen Dorian Strong do that. At some point, you'll want an answer there, though, right? You're going to want your guys to be your guys. We've seen it at times where they do this rotation kind of throughout the year, but it's pretty rare, right? Especially at cornerback. You usually want to settle on a guy. So I think for me, watching Hairston just go through his motions at practice and the little that we get to see, I don't know that he's ready yet. I'd be shocked if he were on the field, let's say, against New England in week five. At defensive tackle, yeah, you were right about Sanders. I think Oliver's going to come back in and he's going to play 60 to 70% of the snaps, which is what we're accustomed to. It seems like they're being very deliberate with making sure that he's 100%, which I think is the right move, right? I mean, heck, they've gone 3-0 without him, so it's not like you're not losing games because he isn't in there. And he showed himself to be a dominant player against Baltimore, so you want to make sure he has that opportunity to kind of get back to being that. Milano is an interesting one. You know, saw him after the game yesterday. Didn't appear to have any kind of brace on or anything like that. He's now two games into an absence, though. You would think that if it were going to be a four-game thing, that you know they may have used an IR spot there. And since they didn't for both Oliver and for Milano, that leads me to believe that you know they're closer than maybe further away. The interesting thing, though, to keep in mind here is that you know you've got New England on a Sunday night, then you've got Atlanta on a Monday, so you got an extra day's rest. And then after that, you got the bye, right? So if you really wanted to play extra, extra cautious with any of these guys, you could be talking about, you know, maybe bring them back after the bye week. I know we're projecting a little bit ahead there. So I think that we're at a position where, you know, they're getting close, but I don't know that there's an urgency at this point in the season, sitting at 4-0, where they are in the conference, the only undefeated team in the AFC. I think Sean McDermott is determined to be as cautious as possible, as safe as he possibly can with these guys, to give them more than enough time to be ready when they do get back. I am interested, though, in the Prater decision, right? I mean, he's been really good for him. He's missed, I think, one kick. And so where is Tyler Bass physically? Even if he's ready, do they make that move? I think that's going to be a question for McDermott this week. Just to kind of see, you know, one, we got to get an update on Bass, and then two, is, you know, would you consider riding Prater for a little longer here?
I think that's an excellent question. You know, we understand that Tyler Bass had his struggles, certainly the for parts of the last two seasons, and you know the old adage in football, whether it's always practiced or not, is, you know, hey, you can't lose your job because of an injury. Number one, I don't know how true that is. I think that's happened many, 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 many times across many teams that you have lost a job because of an injury. But really, to put a finer point on it, you can lose a job because the other guy's better, which, mm-hmm. you know, happens all the time. And in this case, you know, you've got a veteran who's 41 years old. There's nothing that Matt Prater hasn't seen. And just as you said, I mean, you know, let's go back all the way to week one with the Ravens. And I'm asking, Jay, how many days had Matt Prater been in town before that game on Sunday night? Two days?
I believe, yeah, I think he signed on a Thursday and was out on the field on Sunday. So, yeah, four days.
Not only did it connect on all those field goals that night, but you remember that last one, that game winner, that was a fire drill. You know, I mean, they had to do everything. You know, they did not have the benefit of the timeout to hit that game winner. And I understand that there was a breakdown and Kyle Hamilton almost came through, but that meant certainly that wasn't on Prater. So, you know, and he nailed that and he was money and he's been money except for that. You know, that was the one he missed was that was really, really wide. But hey, look, that, you know, not everybody's going to be perfect. And if I'm not mistaken, he's what, 8-9? And he's been perfect on all his extra points, 13 for 13. So I agree. You know, hey, look. Business is business, and if it's going to come down to a field goal, you want to be, you know, especially when you get into January and February, you want to have every bit of confidence. And so I agree with you, Jay. I think that's very, very interesting. Even if Bass is ready and when he's ready, that's going to be a tough decision to have to make. And hey, that's why they're paying Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott quite a bit of money. Okay, final segment here. Looking around the AFC East, let's start with the Patriots, Jay. The Patriots, you know, going into this season, all of our friendly prognosticators, including us, I think had pegged the Patriots as, I'm not going to call them the hottest contender to overtake the Bills, because I don't know that anybody really had them pegged to overtake the Bills in the AFC East. I think pretty much it was a consensus pick that the Bills were going to repeat as champions, and they're certainly off to a great start to do that. Everybody had sort of pegged the Patriots to be the likeliest to finish second in the AFC East, and that's right where they are. A huge victory over Carolina on Sunday, 42-13. Drake May, 14-17, 203 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. He didn't have to do a ton, but I think we would agree, even so far in his young career, Drake May has looked like a guy who has who's on the way to being a more than competent quarterback, very accurate. He can do stuff, you know, he's not Lamar Jackson, he's not Mahomes or whatever, but he can do more than enough with his legs to extend plays and so on. And, you know, I think we all, I don't want to speak for you, Jay, but I think we all think fairly highly of Mike Vrabel as a coach, and he's sort of stabilized that program, if you will. So let's talk about the Patriots. They're a little bit more likely of a team that's going to capitalize on a team that's going to make mistakes, and therefore is going to be the type of team that would be a little bit more likely to capitalize on a Bills team that's going to make mistakes if they continue to do so. So, what do we think about this game coming up here on Sunday, and then we'll take a look at the rest of the AFC East and perhaps the AFC.
I think it's compelling for a number of reasons. I think for the Patriots, this is a measuring stick type of a game, certainly more than it is for the Bills, right? I mean, New England wants to show that it's can be taken seriously as a playoff contender in the AFC, and what better way to do that than to go on the road and beat the number one team in the conference, the team that's lorded over the division here for the last 5 years. So I think there's probably more at stake in terms of a something to prove aspect of this game for New England than there is for Buffalo, but it's compelling. You mentioned Drake May, that the second year and the growth that he's shown. I think the first 3 weeks were okay, and you mentioned yesterday he wasn't tasked with doing a ton, but you only have three incompletions on the day. You're playing pretty well. Obviously, the receivers for New England, like there's some storylines there. Stephon Diggs, first game back in Buffalo. I'm sure the emotions for, and we know what an emotional player he can be, so that'll be a lot of fun to kind of track. Mac Hollins coming back, he's been playing a decent amount for New England as well, and we know he was a big part of what the Bills did last season. So, that's really interesting. I've gone up and down on New England. I thought that they were honestly a little bit overhyped coming into the year, and I think they've been up and down. You've got a home loss to Pittsburgh. You've got, but then they bounce back and they really handle a Carolina. It's just, if you look at our picks in the paper against the spread, you'll know this because mine are not very good, but it is just so hard to figure out. I mean, Carolina goes 30 to nothing against Atlanta. Atlanta beats Washington, and then Carolina gets blown out by New England. And so it is, the cliche that the players use all the time, that it's a week-to-week league, is very true. But specifically, as it pertains to New England, I think this is an important early season game, obviously, for them. And for the Bills, if they can get to 5-0, and that would include a 3-0 record in the division, I mean, we're talking about the potential of this division race being over for all intents and purposes, even earlier than it was last year. And it was December 1st last year, which is embarrassing for the other teams in the division. But I guess to continue on with that, you've got the 0-3 Jets and the 0-3 Dolphins on Monday Night Football talking about, their season is in the toilet for the team that loses this game. They might both be already, but this is kind of a season saver type of a game for the Jets and the Patriots tonight.
Elsewhere, look, we've got what 13 weeks to go, 13 games to go. But you mentioned last week, Jay, that it's not too early to start looking around the rest of the AFC. Bills are 4-0. The other two undefeated teams in the AFC, the Colts lost out in Los Angeles to the Rams, 27 to 20 in Inglewood. The Chargers had to go back east to the Giants. Our friend Brian Daboll started Jackson Dart for the first time. Jackson Dart didn't do a ton in terms of statistics, but he did lead the Giants to an upset win, got their first victory of the season over the Chargers, knocked them down to 3-1. All of a sudden, you look up and the Bills are all alone, the only AFC team that's still undefeated. And again, not to get ahead of ourselves, but look, we've said it over and over and over again. The Bills haven't played a complete game yet, and they're 4-0. We're way ahead of ourselves. I understand that, but maybe we're not. Everything is starting to get set up already for these guys. And if they start to get things, we were discussing injuries before, and after the bye week, you're going to get some more reinforcements too on the defensive line and Ogunjobi and Hoyt. So all of a sudden, you're talking about if you start to get these things cleaned up, listen, the time is now, right? And so everything's starting to get set up for you. Don't count out Patrick Mahomes. He had a big win, obviously, on Sunday. But listen, the time is now. Things are starting to get set up for you. It's time to pounce.
Perrin Keyes, thank you so much, as always, for joining me. Jay Skursky with the Buffalo News. Thanks so much for watching and listening to Further Review.